Hello, my friends. Welcome to Let's Talk. My name is Shay Marville, and I think one of the most important skills in this world is being able to have a conversation with a friend or a foe. Let's Talk is a podcast about listening, growing, connecting, and hoping through compassion and talking. And I mean really talking about the good things and the hard things, and with remarkable people living in a remarkable time. So let's talk. Dr. Melissa Lem, welcome to Let's Talk. I am so excited and honored to have you as a guest on our podcast. And you have been doing incredible things in terms of climate change and making medicine more accessible and making nature more accessible. Welcome to Let's Talk.
Thank you so much, Shay. It's such a pleasure to speak with you today.
So how are you doing? We are now, you actually are officially my very last guest of season one.
Wow, it's an honor. This is great. Glad we could slide it in.
I know, I just wanted to keep going and keep going, but it's like, no, you have to end season one and, you know, get ready for season two, which we are getting ready for. But it's just been so exciting. And this is such a transformational time. And, you know, people like yourself, you are doing things. And I really want you to share what you're doing. And I know probably for you, you think you're just doing what you need to do, but I think that the behavior that you're modeling is transformative for people, because so many people have not heard doctors talk about the value of nature as medicine.
And that's absolutely true. I think doctors and health professionals in general haven't traditionally been partners in the nature and conservation movement. That sort of lies over on the environmental activist side, right? But I think if we can really introduce health professionals to that massive evidence base that nature is actually really, really good for our mental and physical health, then we can become allies and we can really make a difference in making sure that our governments and our industries and our communities really prioritize nature as a health and wellness essential service.
Has the pandemic pushed you more towards this concept, or were you firmly thinking about nature and its relationship to our mental and emotional health prior to the pandemic?
Shay, I have been a bit of a nature nut ever since I was a little kid, growing up in the suburbs of Toronto and sort of not always feeling accepted by my community. I grew up in a majority white neighborhood. And so I really found in the community nature spaces, in the garden in my backyard, was where I didn't feel judged. I felt like I could be myself. And that was really where my love for nature started. And then fast forwarding many years, again, when I was in medical school and in my training, I always found that during the most stressful times, there was this urge in me always to want to head outside into nature to de-stress and to clear my head and to relax. And I think that really culminated when I moved to Toronto after my first job, which was as a full service rural family physician in Northern BC, where I was formerly running the ER, delivering babies, taking care of really sick inpatients. I moved to downtown Toronto, where I then was working in fairly easy outpatient medicine. And yet I found myself really stressed. I thought, wow, my job is so much easier, but I'm sitting here in my apartment looking out at the skyscrapers and hearing the streetcars rumble by, and I feel stressed, even though the work itself is easier. And so I realized at that point, especially as I continued to travel back and forth between Toronto and different rural work stints, that it probably was the nature. And so I thought, you know what? I understand this intuitively, but I can't really believe it. You know, because I'm an evidence-based medical professional, this doesn't exist unless there are randomized controlled trials and research to back it up. So like all, you know, good nerdy people do, I started doing a literature review, and I found there was actually this incredible base of knowledge behind the evidence behind the health benefits of nature. And I thought, wow, I've been a nature lover my whole life. I've gone through medical school, residency, I've been working. I've never heard of this concept before. And so I thought from this point on, and this was just over a decade ago, this is going to be my mission. My mission mm-hmm. is going to be to educate my colleagues and the public about these amazing health benefits of nature. And the journey just kind of started from there. So I've been in this, I've been working and speaking and writing in this field for over a decade now.
Oh my, I have so many questions for you, but I'm curious about how your colleagues within the medical profession respond to you including nature in your prescriptions. How have you been perceived?
We've actually had an incredible response, Shay. So this was a mental barrier that I actually had over 10 years ago when I first prescribed nature to a patient. I thought, this is a radical concept. They're going to look at me like I'm a crunchy granola hippie. They're not going to listen. But in fact, I think because people really intuitively understand that nature is good for them, that they feel more relaxed, calmer, more focused when they head outside. When a doctor or a health professional makes that recommendation to them, they take it like it's regular advice, like diet and sleep and exercise. So we're really trying to make nature that fourth pillar of health. And so in fact, we launched PARX, which is Canada's first national nature prescription initiative powered by the BC Parks Foundation in November, 2020. And since then, I think we're close to 900 health professionals across the country signed up to prescribe nature. And I don't know if you know this, but it's actually really hard to get doctors on board with a new concept. So the fact that we have hundreds of them, the majority of doctors now signed up, I think really speaks to how compelling this initiative is to people and how excited they are about it.
So I'm going to ask you sort of from a nerdy perspective, like what is the evidence that demonstrates nature is impactful in a positive way on your mental or physical health?
There is a huge wealth of evidence, but there are three main studies that we cite on our PARX website, which you can find at www.parkprescriptions.ca. And so the first study, it's really a major study of studies or a meta-analysis that looked at a whole range of different health outcomes, from respiratory health to cholesterol to high blood pressure and birth outcomes and eyesight in children. And what this 2018 meta-analysis showed was that exposure to nature across this huge host of medical conditions had significantly positive outcomes. And so I would say the most research has been done in the field of pediatric health and mental health. And so, for example, in children, having green space nearby or spending time in green space has been correlated with, like I mentioned, better eyesight, healthier weight, higher likelihood of hitting your physical activity targets, because we're really at the same time we're in as kind of this COVID-19 pandemic, we're really in a screen time pandemic when it comes to our children. And that's really leading to sedentary behavior and just changes in your brain that lead to you not being able to interact with your peers as well and not being able to do as well in school. So there's that huge wealth of evidence with kids. And then mental health is the other side. So again, there have been lots of studies done on the benefits of nature for things like creativity, for anxiety and depression. There's a really cool study that was done looking at Japanese young men, actually, who sat on a city sidewalk or in a forest for just 15 minutes. And again, they were sitting, they weren't hiking or doing anything special. And after just 15 minutes, their cortisol or stress hormone levels dropped significantly only after sitting in the forest. And in the city, nothing happened to it. So there's really this biochemical reaction that happens when we head into nature that soothes our brains. And then the two other studies that we cite that really form the basis of our nature time recommendations. There's again, one that came in 2019 and it looked at how much nature time adults needed to report better well-being and health. And they found that at 120 minutes was when that became significant. So we do recommend that people spend at least 2 hours in nature each week. And there's another really cool study. I know I'm getting all nerdy with all the studies.
No, I love this. I love this.
But in 2019, another one came out that had to do with dose. And so what they did was they followed some adults over 8 weeks, and they told them to have a nature experience in a place that brought them a sense of meaningful contact with nature. So it could have been anything. It could have been their garden. It could have been a park. It didn't have to be on the side of a mountain or in the backwoods. Mm. So they said just 3 times a week, spend at least 10 minutes of time in nature. And then what they did was they measured their cortisol levels. And what they found was between that 20 and 30 minute time period after they started spending time in nature was when their cortisol levels dropped the most efficiently. So if you want the biggest effect for the time you're going to spend time in nature, that between that 20 and 30 minute mark is what's going to give you the biggest bang for your buck. So again, 2 hours a week and at least 20 to 30 minutes each time is what we do recommend. And it's all based on evidence.
Stunning, stunning. Now, part of what motivates you is motherhood and parenthood. How do you talk to parents right now when they are struggling with, multiple things, and depending on the ages of their children, but they're struggling with screen time and how much time their kids should have? How do you coach parents around that?
If there's a parent whose child or whose children are really attached to their screen time, mm-hmm. we don't judge. We basically say whatever is going to get your child outside in nature is what we need to do. So for example, with the BC Parks Foundation, they also have a Healthy by Nature program. And through that program, they've actually created these trails within BC. I think one particular trail where they created these posts and put QR codes on the posts that people could scan and then kind of listen to a story read by a local Indigenous teenager about the different plants and animals that they would see. And so there might be kind of nature purists out there who say you're not really in nature unless your cell phone's at home and you're just looking at the trees and the birds and breathing it in and not paying attention to any technology. But what we're saying to parents is if technology is going to get your children out there, then that's totally fine. If your kids want to go outside and play Pokemon Go, please go ahead and do that and make sure they're walking through your local park when they're doing that. We're just essentially trying to reduce those barriers and trying to make it fun for kids to spend time in nature and families to spend time in nature. And then eventually, if they're out there more, maybe they'll drop the cell phone at some point. Maybe they'll stop looking at the Pokemon character and they'll actually notice, hey, it's fun to be out here. I like being out here with my family and my friends, and I want to keep doing this for the rest of my life.
Did motherhood change how you felt about your responsibility to nature?
Absolutely. So I think this moment of reckoning kind of came, I would say, when my son was 3 months old, and I was sitting in Montreal in an apartment where my husband was working at the time. And I was actually reading Naomi Klein's This Changes Everything. And it spoke about the incredible negative impacts that capitalism was having on the climate and how we really needed to create these broad based social changes in order to save our planet. And one of the major things that was highlighted was reductions in biodiversity and reductions in nature. And so at that time, I'd really been deep into the nature health connection. I'd Yes. been advocating and speaking about it for many years. But at that point I thought, do you know what? I can't just kind of always take this tack that let's connect people to nature and leave it. What I realized at that point was that this connection to nature is really connected to planetary health as well. And that I needed to bring in that aspect to the communications that I was putting out there. So that forms another big basis, another big principle behind our program is that not only is connecting people to nature good for themselves, but because research shows that it increases pro-environmental behaviors that go beyond conservation, which would make sense. You know, you spend time in nature, you want to protect it. It actually goes beyond that. It inspires people to, for example, recycle more, fly less, advocate politically more. And so what we're trying to do is create this kind of political, not necessarily political, but societal movement to get people more connected to nature and in turn, turn them into climate change advocates. And really looking at my son every day, he is one of the most beautiful things I've ever seen. You know, I think every parent thinks that about their child. And he's my second love after nature, right? And so just being able to spend time with him outdoors, seeing how he responds to, you know, nature when we're going hiking, amazed by the woodpeckers, for example, we saw on our hike yesterday. It just makes me want to protect it more because I want to protect him more and I want to make sure he has a healthy future where he can enjoy the same things that I did when I was a kid and the same things I can enjoy now.
I was chasing a yellow bird yesterday. Well, I wasn't chasing it. It's just I was so struck by, I think it was a canary, but I'm not certain because it had, it actually, its wings were, looked a little bit different. And it was just this extraordinary color of yellow. It was so bright. And what happened was I was walking and then I suddenly saw this bird and I thought, oh, I never see birds like that, of that color in this area. And then I just started to follow it. And all of a sudden, I was on a different street. My mind was in a completely different zone. And I felt as though I had had some sort of out-of-body experience slightly. Like, it was very strange, but in a good way. And I just feel like nature is so spiritual. Is this a spiritual experience or process for you, as well as an advocacy and health kind of process?
Do you know what's really interesting is I think that that spiritual feeling really came to the fore for me when I was participating in a nature therapy session. So I think many of us have had those incidents like you described where you're on the side of a lake and you feel like you're part of something bigger. Right? Like, it's not just you. It's like you're connected to that the vast outdoors in nature in front of you, or you're on the side, on the top of a mountain, and you look out and you feel so small, but again, connected to everything around you. So I think we can get those profound experiences in exactly what you described, following a bird, just forgetting everything and following it to another street and seeing where it takes you, but also in connecting to nature more deeply. And so I actually participated in a nature therapy session that was put on by the BC Parks Foundation a few months ago, where I just went to a local park with a friend, physically distanced, you know, because there were still pandemic restrictions at the time, and followed these prompts that a certified forest and nature therapy guide was putting on. And just taking that time for myself, because really, I feel like as a busy mom, physician, advocate, I have such little time for myself these days. Being able to take that time and just go deep into what I was seeing, into what I was hearing, and what I was smelling, really, again, even though there wasn't a majestic vista in front of me, even though it was just some trees and leaves and watching the wind in them, it made me feel, again, so connected to the earth, so connected in a way to the people around me as well, and realizing that we're all part of this web of life. Yes. And it's really all of our responsibility to make sure that we protect each other and these beautiful ecosystems that are sustaining us.
Are you excited about some of the research that's coming out about tree biology and the communication that's going on below the ground and the roots between trees, how they have a sense of knowing one another and healing. And then there are questions, I guess there's science around, you know, what that means or how that impacts us. Is that something that you are starting to think about, or is that out of your realm of study?
I follow those stories closely because I think it really does have applications to how we think as health professionals in our leadership structures and in our relationship to the planet. So there's this idea, there has been this pervasive idea that it's the survival of the fittest, right? Like, it's those trees, it's those ferns competing for that last scrap of sunlight, competing for the last drop of water and the nutrients in the soil. But I think that research from Suzanne Simard that you're describing shows us that it's much more complicated than that. Yes. It's not a competition. It's trees are helping each other. Yes. Trees are communicating across vast distances and sending nutrients and sending information to each other that is helping them survive as a whole. So I think when we think about what's happening, for example, in British Columbia with this unfettered logging of old growth forest, we're basically cutting down matriarchs. We're taking knowledge out of the earth by removing these mother trees from our ecosystems. And I think another application this idea has to is medicine, for example. Like we always talk about, you know, how doctors, for example, are very used to being kind of a leader of their own team, right? Like even though we try to be collaborative, really many doctors are type A and sort of like to be in charge. Yes. Anyway, but when you're in a forest, the question is like, which tree is the leader? You know, like all these trees are here. Many of them are communicating and helping each other. Really, there's no one tree to point to. And so I think what we have to realize in medicine or take into medicine is that same idea, is that we're all here collaborating. Each different part of our medical or health ecosystem has a part to play. And we need to kind of break down those silos. We don't exist in isolation. We all need to work together in order to create positive health outcomes and positive outcomes for our planet.
Precisely. And are you also looking at the relationship or the influences of Indigenous culture, Indigenous science on the types of prescriptions you give or on how you're exploring nature?
That's a really excellent question, Shay. And I absolutely think that that's something that we do have to focus more on in our program. Mm-hmm. But thankfully, we are making some headway with that. So I've been connecting with Dr. Nicole Redvers, who's an academic professor who is from the Northwest Territories. Yeah. And she's currently kind of trying to get ethics approval, but also designing a study to look at how to make just how relevant, for example, nature prescribing would be to local Indigenous peoples. Because the idea of kind of this privileged Western wealthy physician telling someone whose culture is so based in the land and respect for nature, I'm going to write you a prescription for nature because you need to spend more time outside. Like, it's kind of ludicrous, honestly. Yes, yeah, so, yeah. I mean, what works for a Southern audience, for a Southern settler audience, doesn't necessarily work for Indigenous people. So we're exploring those questions right now. And hopefully this fall, Dr. Redvers will have some initial data, and then we can really work on making our program more applicable and more relevant to Indigenous peoples.
Well, at least though, I think what it does do is it brings an affirming a physician that says that we have to acknowledge that nature is a part of our health. And so many First Nations communities have been saying that forever and ever and ever. And now we're paying attention to it, and we're not where we should be or could be. But I think when I hear physicians and health professionals like yourself having these conversations and broadening the space, I think it creates more space for all of us to be, you know, included and for us to be more healthy holistically rather than in these, as you said, you know, these siloed ways. I'm wondering about how you as a woman, you know, outside of being a health professional, but you as a woman, how are you evolving with nature? How does nature and womanhood connect for you?
That's a great question. I've never actually thought about that, because I think about nature as really important for everyone, whether you're young, old, male, female, non-binary, any kind of group you may belong to. I think we all see the benefits from nature.
Yes.
I think one thing that we have to keep in mind though, as women sometimes is feeling safe in nature. So it's one thing to say, you know, head out onto a forested trail by yourself. But for example, in Stanley Park, there are coyotes there right now. And so they're telling us to stay off those trails. And there are real safety issues sometimes in our local parks. So I think as a woman, what's important to me to feel safe in those spaces is to go there with community, right? Mm. Like to make nature a space where I can connect with other women, where I can connect with my family, and together we can feel safe and build our relationships in those spaces. So I think, again, that's something that we as physicians and nurses and people who prescribe nature have to keep in mind, is nature doesn't always feel like a safe space for everyone. Mm-hmm. And to keep and just to keep the needs and barriers of different populations in mind, including women.
That's a great perspective. And in terms, it doesn't always feel safe. And I think that is so true. And so when you're giving different options and even acknowledging the idea that it doesn't always feel safe, I think that again creates space for people to go, okay, that was my fear, or that was, you know, that was my worry. Tell me this. I mean, time is going so quickly. You're so fascinating. Can you tell me, what are three things you think we as humans who get the privilege of living on this earth, what can we do, whether we're in an urban setting or a suburban setting, what can we do to just be more in nature and get the benefits?
I think the first thing is just doing it and just going outside. You know, I don't know how many times I've been sitting inside on my laptop, looking out the window, looking at the trees, thinking I want to be out there, but I don't, you know, yeah. I just sit on my laptop. I keep plugging away and my brain gets tired and I get more irritable. So just moving those everyday activities out into nature. So taking your laptop to the park, or if you have a backyard, going out in your backyard. I think that's one thing, is just making time, as much time for nature as you can, in doing things that you don't typically do in nature. I think my second recommendation would be to change our concept about what nature is. So again, traditionally, when the images that we see of people out in nature are people hiking, you know, backpack camping through the backwoods, or again, up on a mountain surveying an incredible scene. And those are great nature experiences. But I think what I want to emphasize is that we can get those health benefits when we feel like we've had a meaningful nature experience. So again, if we can change our idea about what nature is, for example, being able to zero in and focus and really pay attention to what's around you when you're in a city park or your garden, or even looking at a beautiful flower that's sitting on your desk, finding those times during the day to zero in on nature and connect are really important. And again, reorganizing or reframing our ideas about what nature is, because really we are nature and nature is everywhere. And then I think the third idea I would have is making nature time a non-negotiable. Just like you always wash your face when you get up in the morning, you brush your teeth at the end of the day. We want to make nature time something that is an absolutely essential part of people's routines. So it has to be that fourth pillar of health. It has to be seen as an essential health service. And on an individual level, we can really, I think we have to make sure that, again, it's just a non-negotiable part of our lives.
That's really powerful. So rather than taking it for granted and seeing ourselves as outside or above nature, we are nature, and as beings that are our nature, it is our life's work to be in it, to be in nature as well.
That's right. To be in it and to do whatever we can to protect it. That's right.
Oh my. Listen, I have to have you back on the show in the second season. I'm moving more towards talking about wellness and being focused on that, because, you know, basically, as a meditation teacher and someone who's really focused on health advocacy, I think the work that you're doing is extremely, extremely powerful, and would love for you to participate more. So I'm just so grateful that you're here today. And I thank you. I thank you so much for sharing your ideas and the courage you have to say this is important.
You're welcome, Shay. It was so lovely to talk to you today. And I would be more than happy. I would be jumping at the chance to come on your show again in season two.
All right, my friend. Ciao for now. And I wish you and your family so many blessings.
Thank you for joining the conversation. We are growing an amazing community here at Let's Talk. Please share the show. Make sure you're subscribing and keep talking. And you can always reach out to me at CoachShayMarville.com or on Instagram at ShayMarville. Let's talk. Let's keep talking.